That's one of the most tragic episodes, put marvellously well in chapter 6 of the Gospel of Mark. The story, if you remember, is a banquet at which the daughter of Herodias dances, and the king says that he will give her anything she wants as a reward for the happiness she has just given him. And then she goes to her mother, and she asks the mother what she should ask the king for. And the mother, in lapidary fashion, said, "The head of John the Baptist now." So the girl goes to the king, and she says, "I want the head of John the Baptist on a dish." So the story goes that the king is presented as being sorry and afraid of losing face. And the executioner goes, and the story is told in such a very subdued way, as though somehow or other there's no emotion in it at all. But it's suffused with emotion, because John the Baptist is not presented in the text as having any say in his own fate. And nobody cried.
Except Jesus.
Later. But in the actual text, you can see that effectively his head is cut off in the prison, it's brought on a dish, it's given to the girl, and the girl gives it to her mother. And then, on hearing of it, the disciples of John the Baptist came, and they took his body and laid it in a tomb. One of the most tragic and most poignantly told stories in the whole of the New Testament. And the death of John the Baptist is obviously the death of a marvellous man. So good, removed by a tyrant, for the most seemingly trivial reasons. But of course it wasn't trivial, because John the Baptist had held up moral standards in the face of ultimate death, and he had proclaimed them and died for them. Now, that's why, in a sense, you can never hear of a martyrdom in the interests of what is true and good without recalling the way in which John the Baptist bore witness to the values that he had received from God through the Old Testament.
Because his death was as a result of pure self-interest.
Well, basically, it had a major political implication, because if John the Baptist had continued to proclaim that the king is not upholding the law, well, then, of course, the people hearing John the Baptist are more than likely to take their distance from the king. So it is self-interest, self-protection, but self-protection of a tyrant for tyranny. So you could appreciate that there was a political implication of a most profound importance. And it also anticipated in its delineation the way in which Jesus himself would die. Once again, proclaiming in public what is the case, saying it all the time, preferring to die than retract, and ultimately being martyred for what he said. So we see John the Baptist is going in always in tandem with Jesus in the minds of the people who presented the Baptist episode in the Gospels.
And the thing is that the martyrdom of John the Baptist, if you take out the actual details of his death, the reasons for his death are as relevant today, 2,000 years later, as they were then.
You're absolutely right. And you can take the tragic event the other day of the death of Father Ragid Ghani, who, as a priest with his own people in Iraq, had every opportunity to leave Iraq and find either a place outside his own country or in a way that wouldn't involve giving public attestation to the values that he held. But he refused to leave and told everybody that he would stay with them, that the pastor would be with his flock. He would not abandon them. And as you can see, he paid the highest price, and with him were his immediate entourage, the deacons who were singled out and assassinated with him. So people would rightly consider Ragid as a martyr figure, bearing witness to the values of the kingdom of God in the most dreadful circumstances and knowing the implications for doing so.
Which demanded a tremendous amount of courage, knowing that if he carried on as he did, he would pay the ultimate price.
Yes, he was very, very courageous and had the strength, and also, you read now the actual communications that he made shortly before he died, the nature of his priestly and Christian commitment. He knew what he was doing, and he also was hoping that his fidelity to the faith would have an encouraging and sustaining effect for all the faithful who needed him, because they needed a focus to help them, with their churches being bombed, with the destruction of everything that was near and dear to them around, for one sole reason, that they were actually Christians. That was the only reason they were being persecuted. And so he decided to honour his vocation absolutely and paid the ultimate price. So it's wonderfully impressive.
And you are in a very special position of knowing a martyr.
That's right, because I had, with others, taught him for 2 years in the ecumenical program in the Angelicum University, and was certainly part of the exam team when he actually took his license. So I knew him quite well. He was the most personable and kindly and accessible gentleman. And this has been attested also recently in this lovely letter written from the Muslim professor in the Gregorian University, who published a letter which now is available to everyone, on how it is possible for a Muslim and a Catholic to share the same values and to look on life in the same way. And in fact, this professor would see Ragid as being a martyr for the Christian cause.
And I'm sure that his own people in Iraq see him that way as well.
That's right. Of course, the tragedy is that other priests and other religious and fellow lay persons are suffering also dreadfully, but they won't be as well known as Ragid. So everybody at the moment will be talking about him, especially here in Rome, because we knew him so well. But we mustn't forget the people who died with him and all the other people who are effectively paying a great price for the simple fact of being faithful Catholics.